I'm Hillary Hendershot, your host, and this is Profit Boss Radio, episode 91. Profit Boss Radio is your weekly wealth mastermind. Profit Boss is also a community and a movement for women who are ready to take control of their money, break the glass ceiling, and give ourselves permission to finally have enough. Want the secrets of wealth to be yours? This is the place. I'm Hillary Hendershot. I'm a certified financial planner running a leading advisory firm for women, and I'm sharing with you real stories from real life and real women who are making it happen. Forget Wall Street. Let's do this, ladies. Ready for a financial reboot in the new year? Feeling like you're unsure of what to do next with your money? Well, I have an exciting event coming up this January that can change everything for you. I'm hosting Profit Boss Live, a one-day in-person event focused on women building wealth. At Profit Boss Live, you'll have the chance to meet other like-minded women and really connect and talk about money in a safe space that's a totally judgment-free zone. Because let's be honest, money talk is usually cold, boring, and uncomfortable. At Profit Boss Live, we'll enjoy a warm, inviting, fun atmosphere where you can connect, share stories, laugh, and even learn together. And yes, there will be a cocktail or two. Find out more at profitbosslive.com. Listen, the last thing you need next year is more uncertainty, especially when it comes to your finances. At Profit Boss Live, you will create a customized, detailed, and actionable wealth plan custom fit to your financial goals. You'll know which steps to take to save, spend, and invest wisely so you can stop worrying about money or wasting what you've worked so hard to earn. Come meet me and your new money mastermind in San Jose on Friday, January 19th for this all-day event. Go to ProfitBossLive.com to get registered. That's ProfitBossLive.com. Don't delay, though. Early bird pricing only lasts until December 18th, so buy now to save $100 off the ticket price. That's ProfitBossLive.com. Well, I'm pleased to welcome to Profit Boss Radio a very interesting and dynamic woman named Neil Godfrey, who owns and runs a website and a resource called Money for Life. Neil was one of the first female executives at Chase Manhattan Bank, and in 1989 formed her own company, the Children's Financial Network Incorporated, whose mission is to educate children and their parents about money. She's the author of 27 books that deal with money, life skills, and value issues. And she's been honored with a number one New York Times bestseller called Money Doesn't Grow on Trees, A Parent's Guide to Raising Financially Responsible Children. And I know this is one of the topics I get asked about most is how to teach kids about money. So, you know, truly, if you've got a destructive money operating system, you probably need to heal thyself first, right? As a parent, because you're ultimately going to pass what you think and what you know and what you do along to your kids. So that's motivation for you to, you know, go ahead and take the actions that it are going to be required to heal yourself around money. And then you can make sure that destructive money operating system doesn't get passed on to your kids. I hope you enjoyed this conversation between myself and Neil Godfrey about how to teach kids about money. Neil Godfrey, welcome to Profit Boss Radio.
It's great to be here, Hillary.
I'm so glad. Where are you joining us from today? Where's home for you?
I am sitting in Chester, New Jersey.
Chester, New Jersey. Okay, good. Do you get into New York City a lot?
I do. I have a home there. Yes, I do.
Oh, lucky you. That sounds fun. Now, tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to what you're doing at neilgodfrey.com.
Well, actually, I was one of the first female executives in banking in the dark ages, Hillary, when Chase decided to train and hire just a few women to become executives. So I joined Chase, rose through the ranks, became an executive, was there for 13 years, and then became president of the first women's bank. And we needed a first women's bank because the Fair Credit Act had not been enacted until 1974. Your mom could not get credit on her own name.
Is that actually true? Because I've heard that debunked.
No, it is actually 100% true. If you look up the Fair Credit Act, you'll see it was enacted in 74. And you needed a man. My first credit card at Chase Manhattan Bank, and I was an executive. My then husband, then, by the way, is the operative word. My then husband was a law student without any credit. My credit card had his name on it with a permission slip from him for me to use my own credit.
Oh, real. Great.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. Oh, great. That works for me. Anyway, while I was there, I watched women be uncomfortable handling their own money when I was president of the bank. And I did research and found out that it was because we were never taught anything as children. So my kids were little, and I went to look for books to teach them, and there were none. And my three-year-old daughter, you can identify with this, said to me, Mommy, why don't you write the books instead of schlepping us around to bookstores? And I sort of looked at her, and she said, oh, are you afraid? At which point, being the great mother I am, I crouched, established eye contact, and said, no, I'm not afraid. but I was. So anyway, started writing books, and that's how it all started. And that's where we are.
Great. And you have a particular soft spot for what you call intergenerational wealth, really the dynasty of the family. So families aligning themselves around values and wealth building and passing those values along, as well as some of the wealth, to future generations. Yes?
Absolutely. And I love what you do as a professional in the world, because what you're doing is helping people to design the lives that they want. And as a parent and a grandparent, there's no greater gift than we can give to share our values and life skills with the next generation. But it's also wrapped around money. I mean, $30 trillion is going to transfer from my generation down through yours and also to your kids. And what does that mean? And don't we want them to be responsible? I mean, it's not that, you know, the money is not for drinking margaritas, not working and lying around the beach saying, wow, grandma and grandpa are supporting me. That's what it's not about. So let's talk about the design of what that can be and what it looks like and when you should be really starting those conversations. And what do you want to say?
So to make it practical for people, you're talking about parents leaving inheritances for children, but also inside a larger conversation of what the family goals are with that money. Is that right?
Absolutely. And you know, the money was earned by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that story has to be told. And that generation has, you know, goals and objectives for that money. Do you want to get the kids to college? Do you want to help them with their first home? Is there one kid who has special needs? You don't want the big surprise to be at the reading of the will that you know is going to rip the family apart. That's what you don't want. So why not start those conversations about the wealth and the transfer and what your goals and objectives are for the kids? What are the dreams you want to help them fulfill? It's not a substitute for work, I'm guessing.
What's not a substitute for work? The inheritance?
Yeah.
So let's start kind of from the beginning. What are the financial skill sets and mindsets that it's our obligation as parents to impute on our children? What should be our goal when that child leaves the home at age 17 or 18? You know, I, for example, sat in a very inspiring talk by an entrepreneur who said all she ever talks about at the dinner table with her kids is entrepreneurship, and that her son actually has started a business that will, through passive income, pay for his college. So he's 16, 17 years old, and he's got college paid for using his own elbow grease and entrepreneurship. I thought that was pretty inspiring, maybe a little high reach for some parents, but certainly kids should know when they go to college not to stop at the booth for the free t-shirt and the $20,000 credit limit on the Visa card.
Pretty amazing. By the way, the Credit Act of 2009 prevented the credit card companies from being on campus. Not to worry, Hillary, they're right outside campus. So anyway, just for that, it's nice to know that our brightest could be lured by a t-shirt, but that's exactly what happened. What we have to do is teach the kids the basics. The only way to get money is to earn it. There's no entitlement program out there. That's sort of number one. What I do is I start the little ones on an allowance system within the household. Mm-hmm. And they do chores and they earn money. And there are two types of chores. One are called citizen of the household chores, where they don't get paid. And the other are work for pay chores. So we're teaching them how a real household runs, and they get to do chores and earn money. And then they get to budget. And a budget is a habit. It's a lifelong habit. So it's not just something cute that you do with the kids when they're little. You want them to be on a budget forever. And a budget teaches you finite. And that's the big message. So what I do is I have them divide into four different categories. They give to charity. They do instant gratification. They push off instant gratification to save for something that I call medium-term savings. And then also long-term savings, college, their future. You want to start them thinking about their own future and how they have to contribute to it.
As we mature, our ability to think about ourselves and plan for our future selves grows. What would you say if a child just can't get there? I mean, sometimes grown-ups can't get there, thinking about 5 years, 10 years down the road. Is that something that develops over time through conversation with parents?
Well, it's interesting that you said that, because does a 3-year-old understand the concept of long-term savings? No. And does a 10-year-old understand the concept of long-term savings? No. Do adults in America understand the concept of long-term savings? No.
Not many.
No. So you might as well start them with a habit. We teach these kids life skills. We teach them things like brushing their teeth. Do they understand that? No. Do kids understand stopping at a red light? No. But we teach them that. Now, psychologists say that you have to say or repeat something 50,000 times before they understand. In my household, that was young. That was a low, low number as far as I was concerned. No became sort of a standard mantra. I'm sure I said it more than 50,000 times. But we teach them those things, and then they learn them. It's a habit of brushing your teeth. It's not something that's intuitive. They don't understand oral hygiene. In fact, they get another set of teeth, by the way. So for them, it's less important. We, on the other hand, don't get another set of teeth. But so it's a habit. It's a habit to teach them to turn off the water while they brush their teeth. It's a habit not to, talk with the refrigerator door open. It's a habit to be polite to people. Those are the things we keep reinforcing. That's all.
Many of my listeners are coming from a household where money was not talked about at all.
Right.
How did you become someone who was so willing to talk about it openly? And how can they feel out their own comfort levels, knowing what is too much to tell a 4-year-old? I mean, I think we're just coming from no guidance on this topic.
Well, that's sort of where I come in, and that's the guidance that I want to be. I want to be kind of that beacon for you. Here's the deal. You start teaching the lessons when the kids become aware of money, which means when your child says, I want money to buy something in the store, which, by the way, I think is as they come out in the delivery room, but okay. So about 3 to 5 years old. And you'll know when your child's interested in their environment and their world and asking for things. So when they say, I want, that's when you start the money lessons. Make it a game. Make it fun. They do chores with you. They love to help when they're little ones. You know how cooperative they are. And that's what they want to do. So it's a perfect time to start. And then older, they get more and more responsibility. And when they're teenagers, what you're doing is putting them on a budget then. You're going to, for instance, pay some money for their clothing each quarter. Well, you say to them, write down a budget. You write down what you think you need. Go research online to find out what you think all those items cost. Add it up. And then we negotiate. They may think they need 5 pairs of jeans. You may think they need one. That's it. Here it is. I will pay this amount for the jeans. That's it. Here's the money. I'm loading a debit card. And by the way, that's, you know, go knock yourself out. If you want to spend all the money on one item, that's okay. If not, then you can stick to the budget. They learn. And here's the deal. If they run out of money, you have to use the magic words, no. That's it.
I know. And that's a really great introduction to the concept of trade-offs. And that really is what budgeting is. And that ultimately, that's what money is.
Yeah.
You can do this or that, but not both.
Right.
And so what do you think of involving the kids in the parents' money planning conversations?
I think it's great. Now, what you want to do is when they're early teens, again, you know your child. You don't want to scare them to death. But you want them to have a realistic view. To keep hiding bills and to keep doing all this and then expect the kids to go off to college and be financially responsible is ridiculous. So start showing them bills. Show them the electric bill and say to them, here's the deal, guys. If you turn the lights off, unplug stuff, and don't talk with the refrigerator door open, we can save money. You know what? I'm willing to give you a third of the savings, give you half of the savings, whatever that is. Set it up so now all of a sudden their world is their classroom. And do the same thing with other bills.
What would you, but I imagine there are people out there who feel like they're so broken about money and they don't want to impart that brokenness on their kids. And so they don't want to talk about it for fear that they're going to say the wrong thing. Is there hope for that person?
Sure there is. There's always hope. And we get to choose and we get to change. And you say, hey, look, you know what? I grew up with a certain phobia or a certain fear in the household about money. I don't want to impart that to you kids. I love you. I want you to be healthy. You have to deal with money every single day of your life. That's just a fact of life. Even if you're not spending anything, your rent and mortgage are ticking, your electric bill is ticking. It's out there. It's a life skill that they must deal with. It can be incredibly healthy or it can be a disaster. You know that. You've seen it in your practice.
I have. And In my financial planning practice, I don't get too many people who feel broken about money, obviously, but there are plenty of people who have money out there who don't know where it goes and don't know how to talk about it. And it's a very emotional subject. And I imagine, especially for women who are divorced, maybe who are being supported by spousal support. Some of my listeners are paying spousal support, I'm sure, you know, and so how do you talk to the kids about that payment you don't want to make every month to your ex? And I'm just kind of thinking through all the phases families go through. My family certainly went through the child support phase. And man, do I remember how emotional that was, how much my dad didn't want to pay, how much my mom would refuse to let him see us if he didn't pay, how we would end up back in court, you know, and money just seemed like this studded leash to me. It was awful.
No, it can be awful. And one of the things is that I would like to see as a parent that you keep the kids out of that battle as much as you possibly can. If not, then you have to explain to them. Unfortunately, things happen in life. There is change. We were madly in love when we got married. We wouldn't have gotten married. And things don't always work out the way we want them to. And here it is, kids. You know what? They know what's going on, even if you kept them out of it. You know that, Hillary.
I know. I'm just trying to think through some of the spaces that my listeners are in as parents. So do you think that the idea of a family with a financial and values-based legacy, do you think how does that evolve? How does it get incepted, created? And then should it be documented? I always like the idea of bringing, I always have this fantasy that I'm going to set up with a videographer and have my clients come
yes.
in and tell their life stories and the things they want their great, great, great grandkids to know.
Well, there are two things. Number one, I would love you to do that. That's part of my fantasy. But also, I would love the great grandparents to get together with whomever is alive now on earth and talk about what is meaningful. And it can be as simple as, you know what, here's a pen that my great grandpa gave me. I want to leave it to whomever. It could be as simple as that. And this is what I want done with my money. These are my hopes and dreams. And start with, this is how I earn my money. This is what money meant to me. And this is, these are the first jobs I had. And this is how I earned it. And this is how I saved it. And I remember buying my first stock. And I remember working with my financial advisor. And this is, you know, on and on. And this is my legacy to you. I want that money to go to, and you fill in the blank, your college education, to buy your first home, to help you start that business, to whatever that is. These are the charities that I'm passionate about. I'm giving money to them now. I'm leaving money to them. I would love you to get involved in those charities to see if you're passionate about that too. I want you to also talk about, you know, the heart part too with the kids.
That being,
you know, the heart, you know, the charities, the things that,
oh,
you,
oh, the heart.
Heart. The heart also. Yeah. The heart, there may be hard things. Hey, one of you kids is an investment banker. The other one of you kids has some, you know, medical problems. And this is how I'm dividing the money. I feel it's important to leave money, let's say, in trust for the child who's not going to be able to support themselves. And I know it doesn't look like it's fair, but I'm not leaving as much to you, XYZ, because I know that money's not going to be the issue for you. Mm-hmm. As opposed to at the time of death to find out.
I know specifically of a family where that did happen, and it was you're successful and doing well financially versus your sister who is kind of a slacker, has some problems with drugs, and they left the entire estate to, say, the bad apple, and didn't want to tell their daughter, their successful daughter. And I thought, what a tragedy waiting to happen.
Yes.
Yeah, very sad. And I also think part of this is a money coach that I know named Denise Hughes shared, I've seen her speak many times, and she's a personal friend, but something she said to me is, we have legacies as adults that we often repeat, that if you actually look at it, how it was for you when it happened to you, you may not choose to bring that legacy forward. And I mean specifically things like, you know, let's say specifically, I was not allowed to have new, if I was not allowed to have new clothes for the school year, or, you know, I worked and earned the money to buy my first car versus my sister was given, I'm just making this up, right? She was given a car. And then I might then carry forward these ideas towards my own children that were actually maybe painful, maybe not productive for me as a kid. And I actually plan on spending some time letting people think about those things at my upcoming live event, which is called Profit Boss Live. But I wonder if you, if there's any examples of that with you, or if you find yourself coaching parents out of overly strict, or, and I don't mean this in a politics sense, but conservative views or punitive views.
Yeah. In fact, Oprah, when I was doing Oprah, one of the families she had me work with was a family that had grown up to be, they were very poor, and they really, the kids only could have hand-me-downs or sort of Salvation Army stuff. And the mother, when she got married and started working, her thing was, this will never happen to my kids. They're going to have whatever, you know, clothes they want, and on and on. And so every year at Christmas, the parents went into debt to get everything that the kids wanted. And it took them a year to pay it off. And they did the same thing next Christmas. And it was like, hold it. Stop it. You want to, you know, yeah, just stop it. You want to get these kids into understanding that it's not about abundance. It's about, a gift is I love you. And it's not about the new clothes. Let them pick one item that they really want. Let it be special. If the kids, they brought them big screen TVs for each of their rooms. It was like, oh my God. So what we did is I put the parents on a budget. I articulated it and told the kids, who, by the way, understood, and they had the best Christmas ever, because it didn't have to be that it was about abundance and the parents going into debt. And I cannot tell you what a difference it made. And it freed them It freed her from her past. She changed it, but she didn't have to make it ridiculous.
Right. Right. I mean, so many of our adult behaviors are that way. We're either unconsciously repeating exactly what our mother and father did, or unconsciously having to do the opposite.
Yes.
And either way, you're not free.
No, no.
There's no choice involved. It's like knee jerk. And what about parents' role as teens become college students and then young adults who in this world often can't earn a quarter of the price of their college degree in their first, you know, 5 years out of college? I mean, it's just, it's a tough time to try to be a highly compensated salaried employee. What do you feel is your responsibility if one of yours needed to come back to the home or needed money?
Well, first of all, when they're leaving the nest, unless you're completely secure with the fact that these kids are going to be financially responsible, discourage the credit card situation and don't hand them one of your credit cards, because we know it's your credit limit. The bills come to you and they're not accountable for them. And kids, we know, statistically spend more when they're handed a parent's credit card. So that's number one. I do believe they do have to build credit, but the fact of the matter is they need one card with a $500 limit, and that's it. So I believe in the short leash. I love debit cards. I love the idea that you can look over their shoulder and find out what they're spending, put them on a budget, make sure they stick to it, and do not fund any more than what you agree to. And do it per month. Do not put a semester worth of money on a debit card. When they're ready to come out of the chute, and by the way, you know as a financial advisor that your kids can borrow for college. You can't borrow for retirement. So don't dig into your retirement savings to send the kids to college, even though you're feeling guilty about that whole situation. When it's time for them to come out of the chute, I'm a great proponent of having them come back into the home while they start getting themselves pulled together economically, meaning starting to pay off their college debt. But I want you to now set up a situation with a landlord tenant. Why, you may ask? Because a lot of times the kids consider themselves kids and they think that they're back into hotel mom and dad with room service and gas in the car. It's not going to work that way. And all it's going to do is really tick you off, and there will be an explosion. Trust me. So sit down once again, talk about it and talk about everything. It's not only show me your budget and what are you saving for, because this is not an excuse, but the other side of it, hey, here are my bills now with you back home. My bills have increased by 20% or whatever it is.
You should be responsible for part of that.
You should be responsible for that. Yeah. And also, while you're at it, do the other things. Are there, you know, overnight guests allowed? Are there pets? You know, what's the deal? Do they get to use the family card? Do they not? And the other thing is the common courtesy of, I'm not going to check up as to where you are, but if you're going to be late, I'm a mother. I'm going to worry about you. Just check in. Send me a text and say, I'm alive. I'm not going to be home till 2 o'clock in the morning. Fine. I can go to bed. That's it.
Yeah.
Don't torture anyone. And P.S., I'll do the same to you. If I'm going to be late or decide to stay over someplace, I will let you know so you don't have to be so worried.
Neil, I think you make these topics seem so easy. And I think you're a very direct and open communication person. And I think that's very inspiring. You know, I know that there are some folks in my audience who will find it a little harder to open up about things. What do you think makes you so willing to speak openly about topics that most people find at least a little uncomfortable?
I just never looked at money as life's report card for me. What I earned has nothing to do with my self-worth. It's what I earn. It's the business side.
Yeah.
And therefore, I have to, you know, save it and spend it and share it in certain ways. And I always, from little ones, my kids were always involved with what I was doing. My kids would say to me, I'm an entrepreneur. So my kids would come to me and say, is this a macaroni night or is this a filet mignon night? And I would tell them it's a filet mignon night or is it a macaroni night? But they knew it had nothing to do with who I was and what I was doing. And it's interesting because both of them are entrepreneurs today. One is a social entrepreneur. My son is doing projects in India and has, you know, sort of one pair of shoes and he doesn't care, you know, and just an amazingly incredible kid who's, you know, changing the world. And my daughter has come up with something called Tune.studio using vibration technology to change people's attitudes, you know, responding to sound in a positive way. And it's like, holy mackerel, you know, and they're both setting the world on fire. They're both entrepreneurs. They're both changing the world. And, you know, they're happy doing it. And there's some nights that are filet mignon nights and there's some nights that are macaroni nights. And that's why it's just, I'm not my money. I never will be. You know,
I could get for you and for your kids. So you have a right to be proud. It just is what it is.
Yeah, it's just okay. And, you know, I meet rich people and I meet poor people. Okay, that's cool. What are you doing? Who are you as a person? I don't care about your bank account.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned something in the pre-chat I wanted to ask you about. It's a little off topic, but not that much. What do you think about a prenup?
I'm a great believer in a prenup if you come into the marriage with different assets, meaning one has a lot and one has little, or you both have a lot. If you both have little, it doesn't matter. If you're starting out and you're in your 20s or 30s and you both have nothing, that's cool. But you need to come clean with each other. You need to know what the debt is. You need to know everything about what your financial situation is. But it's a very tough conversation when you're coming into or a second marriage and you both have kids or you both have, again, a disparity in income. It's not an easy conversation. If you're younger and it's your parents' money that your parents are worried about, it's something that your parents should also sit down and speak to your fiancé about to say, hey, look, this is our issue. And these are certain things that we're going to set up. And it wasn't her idea or his idea. It's our idea. And it's very important to us. And it's important to us that it, you know, the money transfers, let's say, through the bloodline. Or we have certain jewelry that, you know, if it goes to an ex-spouse, trust me, my grandmother will come back from the grave, you know, the grave and rip the brooch off your new wife. So you're
keep
not
it
gonna,
in the family, people.
You're not gonna want Grandma Jewel coming back to do that. So again, just make it a business. This is the business side. It's not the I love you side.
Yeah.
The I love you side is you're building a life together. The money side is, you know, we have either other responsibilities or there's a disparity and it's, hey, it's not my money, it's my parents. And this is what they want to do and those are their choices.
Well, you're a lot of fun to talk to. And like I said, you make it seem really straightforward. Is there anything else you'd like to add today?
No, I just, you know, I think that it's really important for people to have a financial advisor in their life. You shouldn't be doing your laundry, you know, your dry cleaning yourself. And that's really not important, but you really shouldn't be planning your financial life. And I know the younger generation wants to invest on mobile devices. That's terrific. But that's not financial planning for life. What that is are their robo investing devices that it's one size fits all. And the reason to have someone in your life to help you is that that person cares. So I'm a huge proponent of what you do, who you are, and you're there to help people design the life that they can have.
Thanks, Neil. Yeah, we produce very valuable partnerships with our clients. And, you know, you can never know what your life would have been like if you had taken path A versus path B. And a simple, straightforward cost calculation is a very simple but error-prone way to do that. So I think there's a lot of value in having advisors around you who are interested in your success and your wealth. And you have got a very content-rich website at neilgodfrey.com, and your first name is N-E-A-L-E, and then it's Godfrey, G-O-D-F-R-E-Y, so neilgodfrey.com, and you're wanting people to come have a conversation about money there.
I want you to come have conversations about money, ask whatever you can. I am there to help you. I've got tips and podcasts, as you know, and videos and articles, and let's just join the conversation.
Beautiful. Thanks for being on the show today, Neil. Thank you for listening to this episode of Profit Boss Radio. If you liked it, share it with an artist or creative that you love. And whether you're a painter or a mathematician, may you have all the freedom and prosperity you want.